Hello, this is Sam Cedar. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, generally we release only the first 40 minutes of our daily podcast from the Majority Report at majority.fm. Today is Friday, and freebie rhymes with Friday. Or it's at least, what do you call it? One of those...
Just sounds good.
Let's no, it's an that. Alliteration is the word I was looking for. It's alliterative. And so, therefore, today, I, Sam Cedar, host of the Majority Report, deem this Freebie Friday, because we have such a great array of conversations and guests, including a phone call in from the number one softcore, maybe midcore, porn fan of the porn star, fan of the Majority Report. So stick around for the whole show, and if you can become a member, obviously do so at majority.fm. And please, why not, at the very least, give us a review on iTunes. Okay, enjoy the show.
You are listening to a free podcast of the Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 9th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's casual Friday, folks, so I'm allowed to forget what month, what day it is. But because it's Friday, I haven't forgotten that we're going to have Cliff Schechter on the program. Oh, God. I can't even pronounce his last name now for some reason. Also on the program, it is going to be so much fun. I'm so excited for it. Tom Sharpling of The Best Show on WFMU will be joining us to give us movie reviews or recommendations. And longtime Majority Report listeners will know that the first time the Majority Report went on air, it was when Tom Sharpling gave me 2 hours of his show on WFMU in February of 2003, and we put on the first Majority Report ever. Janine was a guest. I had some, well, we'll talk about it with Sharpling. But first, folks, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. But even before that, Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter on the phone. Welcome, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing? You're having a fun day.
You know, it's just been one of those days, and I got Marin going back and forth, tweeting with Marin, and he actually listened to this. You know, the idea that Marc Maron has somehow changed. Now, I don't know if you've ever met him, Cliff, but.
Sure. I have not been lucky enough. I'm hoping someday to meet the great
It's not
Mark
that
Maron.
Big of a deal, believe me. It's not something you'd really want to enjoy. Maron is the perfect epitome of one of those people who you can be a fan of, but you really want to keep it at arm's length. And he tweeted, I will preface this by saying investigate a bit and see if he's your type of thing. He's not for everyone, but follow Friday, Sam Cedar. we'll talk to Sharpling about this later on the program, because Sharpling is intimately aware of my relationship with Marin. And I also want to say, before we get into this, Cliff, yesterday I asked our listeners, you know, now Cliff is now a media mogul. Not that you weren't a media mogul before, and before you were just a media titan, but now you're a media mogul.
Well, I'm stepping up the chain.
Well, I mean, you're part investor or owner. I don't know what your official title is of a full-on radio station in Washington, D.C.
I think my title's still Jackass, but yeah.
Whatever it is, correct. Chief Jackass Officer. And but so yesterday I asked the segment of our audience who listens to the show, because we have literally thousands of listeners who listen. I can't tell how many days a week they listen, but I can guess. And I said, you know, email me and tell me why you haven't become a member, and distinct from, financial reasons, because we make out deals with people who can't afford to become members and want to be. And I realized as soon as I said that, that it was going to be a mistake, it would just upset me. And we've gotten a couple of those emails. We'll read them on Monday. Maybe you and I will talk about them off air. But invariably you can't ask for that type of information, because it's incredibly annoying. So let's get to – now, for those people who are just joining us for the first time, Cliff and I look back on the week that was in politics and discuss topics that stick out for us. Now, you're from Ohio. Ohio was a big part of the Republican primary this past week. You know, I don't like to
– The crown jewel, if you will.
It was the crown jewel. Now, people who listen to this program know I don't really follow the horse race that intimately. I address it, you know, usually the day after a primary or something like that. But Ohio is a pretty important state because
don't have like one of those intros on your show like they do on CNN now? Mitt Romney.
Day 5,343 of the Republican primary.
That's what it feels like to me.
I mean, I love those. I mean, we at least for a while were pretending still that we cared about more than the fact that it really was like the equivalent of a boxing match or, you know, a soccer game in Europe or whatever you might want to call it. But we've now, like, all pretense is gone. Like, I love those intros when CNN, they're like, he was down and out in Michigan, but can he come back in Ohio?
Yes. They're like bad wrestling intros.
Yeah, they are. It's incredible. But in any case, sorry. Yes, Ohio. It was a big contest here. First of all, on the presidential level, it was big. To talk about that first, Mitt Romney. I would say, you know, my feeling about it, and I'm interested to know yours, Sam. I mean, look, in some cases, you could say a win is a win. He got the delegates. Rick Santorum has too incompetent a campaign to even have handed in their slate of delegates in a number of congressional districts, meaning that he wasn't eligible for, like, I think 18 of them, even if he won there. Romney, again, you know, a lot of this thing is momentum and how the media reports the next day. And when at 1 a.m. or 12:30, whatever it is, people are still discussing, you know, what exactly is happening? How much is he going to win by? Could he still possibly lose? You're not going to get that headline.
Right.
Another state, and again, it's another white, you know, predominantly Ohio is a lot like Michigan. It's a predominantly white working class, a little bit older on average state. And again, I just think it's this image of Mitt Romney as the guy, you know, he's made it quite clear. He's the guy that's going to cut corporate taxes and has a tax plan that's going to benefit the top 1% enormously while, you know, not doing anything for regular people. He's the guy that would let the auto industry die, which in Ohio is not quite what it is in Michigan, but still, that's a ton of jobs. In northern Ohio, markets like Toledo and Cleveland and Youngstown, these are hugely important industry. He's the guy that's talked straight out about cutting Medicare and Social Security. You know, I mean, you start looking at all that stuff. Rick Santorum, it's the sort of perception versus reality. It's just as much of a corporatist, but he doesn't come off as much of one. He talks more about social issues, as we know, which got him in some trouble for doing that. But in the broader analysis, Romney can't identify with virtually anybody. Like upper middle class people feel like they can't identify with Mitt Romney.
Right.
You know, and so he came to the state and I mean, what did he win by? 12,000 votes in the end, I think 38% to 37%. I think he's gonna have a lot of trouble here. I'm assuming he's gonna be the nominee. He's gonna have a lot of trouble here in the fall election.
I don't know that it's possible for a Republican to win the presidency without winning Ohio. I mean, mathematically, it is, but from everything I've read, that it's highly unlikely.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, again, time has changed, and you can't always rely on this kind of stuff. But I'm trying to remember if it's just this century, or I think it's really forever. I don't think any Republicans ever won without winning Ohio. I know they haven't this century. And my guess is, considering that the late 19th century, with apologies to my fellow Ohio brethren, was filled with mediocre Ohio Republican presidents, one after the other, from Garfield to Rutherford B. Hayes and others, they probably carried their home state pretty much every time. So really, as a Republican, you have to carry Ohio. You've always had to. And it's still an important part of the calculus because, look, they're not going to win, you know, California, New York, New Jersey. They are even in trouble now that Virginia and North Carolina have become swing states. Really, the only big state they can count on at this point is Texas, and give it 4 to 8 years with the growing Hispanic population. And soon, as some Republican pollsters have admitted recently, if they don't change their strategy towards the Hispanic vote, soon Texas may fall into the swing state category. So they need Ohio, quite frankly. They have to have it.
And when you say – I should just clarify. When you say this century, you've dated yourself because you're actually talking about the 20th century. We've actually moved into the 21st century.
I'm kind of an old guy these days.
So no, I know. Believe me. And I'm older
than you. My kid was watching like one of these Spider-Man cartoon episodes on the iPad earlier today, and they said something like they made a joke about she's like about how old somebody's boyfriend looked, and they said, "Oh, you're dating 40-year-olds. No wonder you're such a weirdo." And I'm like, "Well, I just turned 40, so there you go."
There you go.
I'm an old dude, Sam.
So I mean, but one of the things I wanted to ask you about Ohio, and then I want to move on to some other things because it's been quite a week. It really seems to me that that Ohio seems to be sort of imploding. Like, there's a lot of internal strife within the Republican Party in Ohio, and it also seems to me that John Kasich is doing his best to sort of like destroy the Republican brand there.
He is unbelievable, yes, and oh, the perfect timing, Sam, because I just wrote my syndicated column this week was on how Obama's BFFs, and my point was that even better for him than Mitt Romney and Santorum, who are admittedly, and Gingrich admittedly, should be his best friends for what they've done to each other, are John Kasich, Rick Scott, Scott Walker, and Bob McDonnell, and what they've done. And obviously Kasich I've seen up close, and I mean, it's been amazing. He won north of 30, I think 35% maybe even more of the union vote when he ran here, during the election in 2010. He won a larger share, obviously, if you count union and non-union, white working class voters who had traditionally been Democratic. Then he turned around and, of course, made union busting, even in Wisconsin became kind of more famous for it because Scott Walker did it there a little bit beforehand. But here it was even worse because not only did Kasich stand up and quite publicly call a policeman that had stopped him an idiot, which is the kind of stuff Kasich does. He did that while, of course, he was trying to also cut collective bargaining rights for cops, for firefighters, for teachers. He went after groups that normally are considered pretty sacred, and he went after them in a pretty personal way, as you can, you know, calling a cop an idiot and that kind of thing. And it backfired in an enormous way. He lost, I think, 61-62% in the end, overturned in a referendum this past election cycle, 2009, overturned what he had done. His big anti-union measure. It activated a lot of union members to come out against the people that had voted for him. And so a sort of swing block of white working class union voters are now completely turned against him. Then, you know, his state legislative cohorts allowed this sort of farce of a fetus testifying here, which was, you know, a woman being hooked up with a microphone. I guess instead of a transvaginal ultrasound, they gave the microphone so the fetus could talk to him when he'd get up and dance a jig or something. I don't know. This is what they're doing with state time and offending women. And then, you know, guns in bars, which in the suburbs around here, not very popular. You can now carry your concealed gun into a bar, which has already led now to, I think, a couple shootings. You know, it's just been radical measure after radical measure. And then the coup de grace was right the week of the primary. We get hit by these tornadoes. And the town of Moscow, which is to the east of Cincinnati, was literally almost just destroyed. And a number of other towns, a number of people died and are injured, lost their homes. And Kasich, unlike Mitch Daniels, another conservative Republican, and his initial reaction is to refuse even considering it being declared a federal disaster area and getting the federal funds that come with that so that they can help clean up and help take care of people's lives and the rest. And after a huge backlash, he relented slightly and said, okay, well, we'll let the federal inspectors come in and look at it, but still has not said whether he'll accept federal funds. And again, it's these guys have allowed
Koch brothers funded
ideology to just and he's destroyed. I'll let you jump in. I just want to say quickly, he came in and people were looking for a guy to be bipartisan and to get things done and to improve the economy, which is what he ran on. And he has literally helped destroy the Republican brand in this state and actually even started an intra-party war with the current chair of the Republican Party trying to have him removed. So, I mean, if you can find a dumb thing that Kasich hasn't done, I'd like to find it.
Now, Kasich is a former congressman, a former Fox News host, and a former I guess he sat on a board of director of some investment bank. I can't remember what it is now.
Oh, actually, it was a good one, Lehman Brothers.
Lehman Brothers, and so
which of now, course no longer exists.
I want people to think about the mentality, because this if there is a better metaphor for the mentality of these right wingers and frankly the establishment in some respects, because you see this even with the establishment people who are ostensibly liberal, the idea of like there's this sort of morality about bootstraps and I'm willing to suck it up and not declare a state of emergency for parts of my state because I'm tough. But in fact, there's no toughness there. You're going to maintain your sense of morality or ideology in and basically deny people who have lost everything help from the U.S. government.
Well, it's easier to be quote unquote tough when it's not your house.
Exactly. I mean, it's just so repugnant, and to see him have to then back off it was somewhat satisfying, but still, it's just such a tragedy for these people. And the idea of like, you know what? If my house was wiped away, I'd tough it out. That's basically what he's saying. But of course, his house was not wiped away. And whenever they find themselves in that situation, Trent Lott comes to mind.
I was just about to say that Trent Lott.
You know, a classic case of against a federal government intervention until it's his house that gets wiped out by Katrina, and then all of a sudden he's filing lawsuits against insurance companies and telling the federal government, you got to get down here so I can have a mint julep on my porch again with President Bush.
There's
nothing more repugnant than these people who talk about morality and talk about sacrifice when really they're just talking about other people, and it's not really sacrifice for them. It's just some way of sort of masturbating to their own sense of morality. It really is.
It's theory. It's like everything else with them. You know, it's like war with, you know, for the vast majority of them that would never even go fight a war. War is theory. It's easy to talk tough because you're not the one in the trenches. And they do the same thing with this. And again, you pointed it out. The Trent Lott thing lays it bare. Numerous other things obviously lay that their ideology is full of crap bare. I mean, you know, we recently the reports that came out, I even was on the Young Turks the other day talking about this report that shows obviously what we already knew, which the red states take a lot more federal funds in than blue states do.
Right. There's some really interesting
There's some
interesting theories out there about that now, that in some ways, because the red states receive more federal funding than they put into the system, and that in some ways it frees up. I mean, I've read some interesting pieces on this theorizing that what it does is it frees up, because these people are on Social Security, because they're on Medicare, because they're getting all sorts of other subsidies from the government, that it actually frees them up and frees up their politicians to take a high moral ground, because these people aren't suffering, because they're – or I should say they're prevented from falling below a certain floor. And as such, it frees them up to actually criticize government. It allows them to avoid the sort of the real genuine question that they would have to ask themselves if they were in need of this. And therefore, they can go on sort of like get a free pass to criticize the idea of these programs. And, you know, it's like Andrew Schiff in that story from a couple of weeks ago in Bloomberg.
Yeah,
you know,
that was awesome.
He's come on this program and said, you know, if you're not making enough money to become rich, you're not worth it. And then he's decrying in a Bloomberg piece that his $325,000 a year he's taking a hit because his bonuses are down and he can't live the way he wants to live. I mean, it's pathetic.
You do have to give up the second car and driver every once in a while. It's tough.
I'll just
one more point on that because I think it's important. You know, when we went through the whole, and we're still going through it, the whole Palin melodrama, and we will with Game Change coming out and the rest of it, that people forget that, you know, the tough talk and all that, and the reason why, you know, you could do that is because Alaska is essentially a socialist state that's guaranteed money from the oil companies there that they disperse to everybody. You know what I mean? And so it just, you find this again and again. You know, it's a tough talkers, and I loathe this attitude that, oh, I made it by myself, no one helped me, and that's, of course, what Mitt Romney said, too, even though his dad bought him his first house, and, oh, maybe the fact that you grew up in a wealthy environment and went to the best schools because your family could afford it had something to do, and your dad's name, of course, had nothing to do with your success.
Wait, Cliff, are you suggesting that a guy who grows up the son of a chairman of a major American motor company and a governor of a state has some type of entree that your average
ambassador,
Joe,
health and human services, cabinet secretary, presidential candidate. Yeah, that never helps at all. I mean, as you know, Meghan McCain is where she is because of her intelligence.
You know what? You don't understand what rich people go through. Don't understand. Don't understand. This is what I always liked about, like, you know, sort of like actors in Hollywood are like, it sucks to be in the shadow of your famous parents. So, you know, you don't realize that the reason why you go through those auditions and do well is because everyone says that's so-and-so's daughter or son.
Right.
But, all right.
I'm sorry. So I'll let you shift gears.
No, let's shift gears slightly here because I put out a call on Twitter and, you know, what should we talk about today? And it's been on my mind and some people have taken it a step further. I want to talk about what Eric Holder came out on. I guess it was Monday. I spoke to Glenn Greenwald about this yesterday, basically asserting or theoretically explaining why the Obama administration feels that they have the right to assassinate American citizens on foreign soil. And that the Constitution does not provide, though it provides for due process, it does not necessarily mean judicial review. And sort of ignoring the standard set in that famous Hamdan case as to you may not need to go into a court, but you need an arbiter who is theoretically neutral in this situation. So I got two things from Twitter that basically ask the same question. One is from MPJH. And one is from David Dixon, Evening Star, who calls into this program quite a bit, asking the same question. And I'm going to paraphrase the two of them. How can you support Obama in light of the fact that he is no civil libertarian and arguably asserting powers that are more aggressive and extensive and worse than even George Bush's power grab when it comes to these auspices, under the auspices of Obama doesn't call it, but the war on terror. This idea that, you know, look, if George Bush had asserted what Obama has asserted, the ability to kill an American citizen, I personally wouldn't be able to open up any of my email accounts without it being completely flooded with this, without people running around with their hair on fire.
Actually, email accounts, but if George Bush could have killed whoever he wanted to, your email account might actually have blown up on you when you opened it up.
Honestly, I mean, and people are right about this. And then the question is, you know, how do you support Obama in that context? You know, it's a tough argument to make, frankly. How would you make that argument?
Well, I mean, you know, I make the argument with all these things, it has to be an overall argument. I have to look at, you know, what line up, what is better and what is worse, that the world, you know, it's not going to be the people running for office. I know we all have the Jed Bartlett dream from the West Wing, but, you know, the truth is that it's never going to be exactly what I want it to be. So I think people who've heard me on this show and other places I've been know that I've been quite critical of President Obama at times, and I still am, on things that I think where he didn't do well, and there are a number of them. And this is something I have a problem with. To me, the bigger problem, I would say, with this issue is just the whole slippery slope we've been going down for about 60 or 70 years now. It's almost like, you know, I mean, the prescience of that speech that's again and again replayed by Dwight Eisenhower about the military-industrial complex and the dangers is amazing. I mean, again, you know, I was reading a column about this the other day. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was Charles Pierce, who's brilliant. And you know, you have to put all this stuff together. It's broader than just this one issue, and you have to remind yourself that it's when you start down this road. And after World War II, we started down the road of, oh well, you know, we don't need to declare war in Korea. It's a UN action, and before you know it, it's not a UN action. It's just you arbitrarily going to war, like in Iraq. You know what I mean? And before you know it, and that's the problem with all of this stuff, is you need to stop it right when it starts. Because in the ingrained culture, that's how culture changes. Is it doesn't change usually in big, huge ways. It's that somebody pushes the envelope a little bit, and then a little bit more, and a little bit more. And by the time you're done, you've gotten to where you don't recognize where you began anymore. You know what I mean? And that's my problem here, is that in a way, you know, I don't even know. You know, the truth is that I'm not even sure how much this changes things. And don't take this the wrong way. I'm not defending Obama. They may not have legally asserted this, and I think he's wrong to make that assertion. There needs to be obviously due process, and I'm not sure what exactly that due process needs to be. I would think it would be a congressional intelligence committee, you know, as well as others. Potentially, obviously, the judicial system needs to be involved, like what we talked about with the FISA warrants. But you know, I just have questions in my mind. I'm not sure. Like, for example, you know, and maybe you can answer for me, Sam. Maybe others out there can tweet in answers. But for example, when Bill Clinton took that shot at Obama and Obama, God, terrible, Osama bin Laden, and missed him, you know, when he was in the tent in Afghanistan. Remember what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And the Republicans all said it was because of the Monica Lewinsky thing. Well, okay, that wasn't a U.S. citizen, but he was obviously trying to kill somebody. And the question to me becomes, all right, well, what kind of a case did he have to make back then to do that? You know what I mean? I mean, I think this is a complicated area. Obviously, if there are terrorists out there, legitimate terrorists who are trying to attack and kill Americans, sometimes decisions need to be made quickly. And the question is, what is the process for that? And I don't know what it is. I certainly think to when you put something in law, that is a terrible thing, because then you're just saying that under any circumstances, a president can arbitrarily just say, I want that person dead.
That, to me, is the biggest problem with this. I am not so naive as to believe that U.S. presidents have not issued ordered the assassination of at least non-citizens. And frankly, I'm not so sure. I wouldn't sit here and be so naive as to assume that they haven't killed people like Awlaki in the past. But when you codify these things into law, when you codify the notion, when you make an assertion that all that we need to assassinate an American citizen is essentially a blanket, you know, trust us, we're handling it, is essentially what they're saying.
Right.
Because they've offered no, they won't release the memo from the Office of Legal Counsel, which stipulates how they came to this conclusion. It does not comport with any case law, as far as I know. And so this is very problematic. Now, insofar as the question of how do I continue to support Obama, you know, again, it's, you know, there is no option. There is no D, none of the above here. You can't do that. It doesn't exist. It exists in some other fantasy world. But the fact of the matter is that the American public needs to speak up more about this. I can still say I am going to vote for the lesser of two evils. And why at the same time, agitate against this type of authority existing for the president. Because I'm not just worried about Obama having this authority. I'm worried about future presidents having this authority. And I have no reason to believe that Mitt Romney is going to be any more judicious in this regard than Barack
right.
Obama.
Well, nobody ever gives up power voluntarily. I mean, very few anyhow. I suppose there have been cases here and there. But the truth of the matter is that when you get power like that, which the Constitution was not supposed to provide for you to have, which we purposely knew that giving any executive this much power, my God, everybody, these guys love to, the Tea Party or something, love to quote the founders. I mean, anybody who's gone back and has studied history and is, you know, to see how scared they were in every way of executive power after King George, and to think that we're in this situation, yeah. I mean, that's, to me, so I'm glad, I mean, because I think you see it the same way as me. You know, and I know that that year you did in law school, Sam, that's why I trust your opinion on this.
Right, right.
It's that it's the legal...
Yes.
I'm just having fun with you.
I was smart enough, of course, not to hug any of my professors. So
we're going to find some stuff from somewhere at some point.
That cuts both ways. On one hand, I didn't become president of the United States. On the other hand, you know, I don't have any of those Breitbart parasites coming after me. But, you know, the
right. On the other hand, you're completely safe from the very logical and intelligent attacks of Dana Loesch.
Yes.
So, you know, at least you know you're safe from that because she is an intellectual, that one.
But somebody, you know, somebody tweeted me and said, personally, I'm doing a Bernie Sanders write-in. Why? Why even write in that name? Why do any of that? Like, who is it that you're sending a message to? That old lady at the polling booth who's going to be counting this, if there's even a person counting the ballots? I mean
that's the problem.
What are you doing?
I would want those choices, too. We all would want those choices. But I think in my mind, and obviously in yours, I have to look at what the choices are, you know, and there's one group of guys who pretty clearly I'm concerned about what Obama's going to do, but they don't even bother to be concerned about what Santorum or Romney would do with Iran. They would bomb it.
Right.
I mean, pretty clearly. So there's not even a reason to be concerned there. You know, when it comes to union rights and other things that Obama hasn't stood up strongly enough on, I'll be the first to say that. But again, in the end, I have to make a decision. And on some things I care about, again, something that affected the area I'm in a big way, the auto bailout, what Obama did was fantastic. Mitt Romney would have let it blow up. So I have to, you know, I have to make those comparisons. And then I talk to people your friend and mine, Mike Papantonio, who certainly knows the legal layout, who reminds me that everybody talks about the Supreme Court all the time, but it's not the Supreme Court as much. They don't hear most of the cases. It's the lower federal courts.
Right.
These guys are stuffing them with loons.
And
with
Obama,
lunatics.
Frankly, has done a very horrible job of staffing that. I mean,
Mitt Romney
would do a much better job with people that we don't like. I mean, yeah.
Right. And Rick Santorum, literally, who would he put on? I mean, that crazy nut from Alabama. What, Moore? I'm sure that guy would be up for the Supreme Court. I mean. Right. You know, it's just you have to think about all that stuff and then decide what are you going to do in the end. And I think that that's the conclusion we come. Doesn't mean I approve of this. And frankly, as you said, codifying this in law, anything like this in law is scary. And I'm glad to see with the NDAA to see Udall and I'm trying to think who else it was trying to get that bell unrung, so to speak. You know, and I'm trying to think who the other member was. And maybe you know. Might have been Wyden, I'm not sure. But they're trying to get that done. So, I mean, you try to remedy this and you try to stop the worst excesses. And, yeah, I've got a problem with what Obama's done with executive authority in a serious way. It makes it bipartisan. It pushes that envelope just a little bit more and makes it culturally acceptable. And that's the thing. I was asking the question earlier. I wasn't defending. I was just sort of saying, you know, I am realistic enough to know also that, you know, there are going to be times where a president is going to have to take action if somebody's planning something somewhere. And I have no problem with what Bill Clinton did trying to take out bin Laden, quite frankly. And, you know, I also have no problem. In fact, I'm proud of what Obama did in taking out bin Laden this time.
Yeah.
And I think there, you know, and I know some on the left would disagree with me there, but
I think there are times. I'm not crying for bin Laden, but I do think it's a shame that we can't have some type of rule of law in this country and bring someone like that to some type of to a courtroom. I mean, you know, particularly if we're so convinced that the guy was worthy of just being shot as he's trying to go to his underwear drawer or whatever he was doing in that house, then I think we should be rather confident that we can bring him up in front of a court and try him on charges. Now, with that said, you know, the fact is that being an adult And having to make a choice is not always an easy and comfortable thing. You know, when I think about, you know, you need to weigh out. And for some people, the idea of civil liberties is the primary focus of what's going to drive their votes. I mean, you know, for me, I think if I saw I don't know what it would be that it would take for me not to vote for Obama. I don't know if it would be something along the lines of cutting Social Security and Medicare or a series of other things. But it is maybe it would be rounding us up and sending us into FEMA camps might be it. I'm not sure where that line is. It's a similar situation to me, you know, in my mind at this point, in terms of people are calling for an intervention in Syria. And, you know, there are some things where I think that you simply look in what you have in your quiver and you say, I may not have the arrows to address this. In other words, I don't think there is a solution to the problem of Syria from an American perspective. I think it's one of those things where you just have to watch and see something horrible happen. And
I don't know that there's always
an answer. And to a certain extent, I don't know that there's an answer for a genuine leftist or a progressive or a liberal. And, you know, maybe the answer is in what are those what you identify yourself as in that in terms of what you do about Obama. I don't think that we have, sadly, the electoral leverage in this situation to do anything about it. And
the electoral leverage would have been with a primary. It would
be
if we had a system that allowed more than two parties. It would be if there still, like there used to be, was a reasonable Republican Party. I mean, you could have sat there in 1976 and you could have chosen between Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford. And they both were reasonable guys on a number of issues, and you would have decided, well, Ford pardoned Nixon, and that was terrible, which I do think it was, so I want to vote for Carter, or Carter is more of a Christian fundamentalist, which he was back then, and Ford seems like he's, you know, Ford came out in favor of the Equal Rights Amendment. Maybe I want to vote for Ford. You used to have those options. But now we don't. We've got one party is a party of insane people, and we know that. And so, you know, when you think about that, you think that there was no primary. I mean, there are a number of ways that could have been done. Then what you need to do is you need to have a national movement like there has been on certain issues, gay rights, which has I think helped push the president forward on that. Other things that have happened to stop PIPA and SOPA and all these crazy things.
Occupy. The answers don't lie in electoral politics. And
that's exactly right. And I think this is one of those answers. I think there needs to be a national movement of people fighting for civil liberties, whether it's NDAA, whether it's the president being able to codify into law killing people. You know, we need to make and that kind of stuff needs to be clear, because as I tried to say on this show, you know, I have strong opinions on stuff, but sometimes I'm even a little, you know, torn on things. Whereas codified in law, no. There needs to be some due process with the congressional committee, absolutely, you know, as well as judicial review of these actions. But I do also understand that there are going to be times in the world we live in where a president's going to have to, for lack of a better word, you know, lob some bombs in somewhere. Oof. It's terrible, but I do understand that, and I don't like it. And I don't think it's always clear. What is clear to me is absolutely you can't codify that in law. Absolutely you can't not release documents and not share them with people. Absolutely that stuff is wrong. That I do know.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure.
Samuel, the pleasure is certainly mine.
I'll talk to you next week, or maybe not. You may be going on vacation. We'll see.
I am going on vacation, but I may find a way to take a little break from the vacation just to talk to you, Sam.
I know what it's like to have a family. All right.
I think that's the perfect ending to this conversation.
Cliff, I'll talk to you hopefully next week.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Cliff Schechter, folks. When we come back, we'll be talking to Tom Sharpley.
Woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America.
don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, I cannot tell you how much of a genuine pleasure, and on a day like today, I get very little. I didn't think there would be anything that could give me pleasure, but it is a genuine pleasure and an honor to welcome to the program from WFMU's The Best Show on WFMU, Tom Sharpling. Hi, Tom.
Hey. Oh, hi, Sam. How are you?
Did you think you were going to talk to somebody else?
I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you were going to pawn me off on one of your associates.
Right. No, of course. I have the associates to handle some of the lesser interviews, but this one I come in and I do myself.
Okay, good. I thought they might punch you, like give you the questions to say later, and then just kind of assemble it.
Right. No, a lot of times I'll have one of the producers come out, go out, ask the questions, and then I'll just dub my voice in and do like a reaction breathing shot. I mean, because it's audio, so there'll be I'll come in and I'll do a couple of these like.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they just drop those in the interviews.
Yeah.
But no, we actually do the show live, so it's that much harder to do that.
Yeah, I know. I know what it's like to do a live show.
Tom, what was in your mind? Now, I should tell people right now, of course, we've invited Tom on to give me a couple of movie recommendations because, as you know, Tom, I have a child, and my child and my wife conspired to prevent me from going out and seeing a movie in a theater. I'm not allowed. The idea that I could leave the house for over 90 minutes and be doing something that is ostensibly for my own personal enjoyment, that's not allowed in my life anymore. And so I have to watch, I am restricted to watching movies only on Netflix or on demand or Amazon on demand. And so we brought you on to do that. But before we get there, what was in your mind back in early 2003? Maybe it was in January. I can't remember when it was that you suggested this to me, that you would allow me to take 2 hours of the best show on FMU. I think it was probably unprecedented at that point in the show, and probably you never did it again for good reason. But to allow me to do the Majority Report, John Benjamin came out to New Jersey and did the opening and the intros and the liners live.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Well, I saw that you wanted to it was something that was clearly important to you, and you know what it is? It's like so rarely in life does anybody like spot when something's important to you and actually help you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like it never happens. It's like, oh my God, there's actually an opportunity for me to maybe throw somebody like a little bit of a bone here with something I actually have control. Look, I never have control over anything to do that either. To like, I'm never in the position to help anyone. And so it's actually like, oh wow, I can actually, Sam is clearly important to him. And it's like, I have an opportunity to give him some of my radio show so that he can do the inaugural episode of the Majority Report.
People should understand, this was a year before the launch, over a year before the launch of Air America. This was basically Tom Sharpling like walking around as his own personal Make-A-Wish Foundation for a guy who was not ill in any way.
Yes, I was. I saw Yes, and but you were you were ill with the desire to have a broadcasting career.
Well, you know, it wasn't so much that. I mean, at that time, I mean, because I was sort of enmeshed in you know, in comedy. I think at that time it was before I went out to direct I'm with Busey, before I made pilot season, and those things were probably in the works at that time. But I think it was also just a function of how, and I know you were annoyed about this too. February 2003, we were rushing headlong into a war with Iraq, and there was nowhere where you could hear a dissenting opinion. Nowhere.
No, it's easy for people to lose sight of what it was like then, but it was really the world was a really bizarre place. Now it's now I mean, and still to a point, there's people are speaking out on all sides of things, but it's also then it was like you felt like you were kind of betraying the country. If you
were explicitly told you were betraying the country at that time. I mean, you know, people forget in 2003, their MSNBC was essentially the functional equivalent of CNBC today. You know, I think they had, it was primarily right wingers or, you know, sort of supposed centrists. You had Fox News. You had no Media Matters for America. You had no Air America. You had no Think Progress. You know, I don't even think you had the Center for American Progress at that point. There was no liberal outlet online or offline or institutional, I should say. There was just a couple of blogs. And one of the only voices that was allowed to go on TV and express an anti-war sentiment was Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
And she, of all people, knew how absurd that was.
Yeah, and she was your guest on that first episode.
Yeah, and there was also a dude we brought on from Fox and Friends on the weekend, I think it was.
Where you got into a thing with him, right?
Yes. I think at one point he just said, like, what are you talking about? I cover domestic politics or something. Like, I just came over from local news. It was pretty ugly. I mean, I don't even remember what that thing sounded like. Now, this is another question I get all the time. It is, I believe, the only show that's not on the archives of the best show on FMU online.
It's not on the archives proper. There are a few shows that did not stay on the archive for one reason or another, and that's one of them. It's only a handful of shows, but I put them on an audio DVD that people could get, and it's floating around. It's not on the proper archive, but I'm sure if you do some searching, you can track it down online.
Yeah, that's very cryptic. What's up with that?
You know,
it's like a radio show. I get sound effects.
So apparently, me doing that in 2003, I'm responsible for getting a stinger thrown in my own face now.
Poopy poopy poop.
So this is what I created. Back.
This is what you get, buddy. Look at how far I've come.
You're welcome.
Look how far I've come.
You're in your basement.
I wish I was in my basement. It's not quite as large or as airy where I am now as a basement.
So it's like Rupert. It's like a radio Rupert Pupkin.
It's totally a radio Rupert Pupkin. Of course. Of course. I can't believe you. Like I let me tell you this. The other day or last week, WFMU has their marathon. Twice a year, right?
And it's once a year, but it's 2 weeks.
Okay, it's once a year, 2 weeks. WFMU, as far as I can tell, seems to generate more money than any other show on this on the station. It's massive. When you get out there and do the Tom-thon, it's crazy. And
yeah, it keeps growing.
it keeps growing. Your show is huge. I mean, back in 2003, you could afford to let a guy like me come on because it wasn't the sort of the juggernaut that it's become. But I cannot tell you,
yeah,
when I watch that Ustream of you in there, how jealous I am of the equipment and the staff and all of it.
Yeah.
Not to malign the staff here.
You had that at one point.
Yeah, no, at one point. Yes, I know. That's what makes it even that much more painful.
And you never passed up an opportunity to rub it in my face.
That's true.
That you were on like a real radio station.
Correct.
You'd call and you'd make fun of me.
Yes.
And then, you know, that thing about the ladder, right? When you got to be nice going up.
You know what? I have a different theory about that. You know, be mean while you got the chance, because it's not going to last. That's what I...
No, that actually, honestly, might be the way it's supposed to be. It's just get your shots in, because you might be powerless, and they can't do it while you can't get beat up.
Right, exactly. Exactly, because yeah. Now it's ridiculous. I mean, now it's almost, that stuff is, you bring it up, but it is hilarious that I did that. Yes, of course, I would come on your air and I would denigrate your entire operation. And then, you know, look, now I'm pining away just for one of your mic arms.
What are you talking to, an SM58?
No, I, you know what? This is actually, it's something I picked up at Radio Shack. No, the microphone is actually...
Laptop.
No, the microphone is really nice. This is a I saw a picture of Marin's microphone in an ad, and let's talk about Marin for a second. But I saw, you know, like on the New York Times, he had a picture of him, you know, doing his podcast, and he had
Sennheiser, I think.
No, the Shure SM7B. And I was like, I literally just started whining about it. Someone sent me one.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't get anybody send me anything. Well, nobody sends me anything.
There you go. Now I'm back on top.
How did you whine about a microphone? I want a new mic.
I said it's not right that Mark Maron is sitting there with those fancy microphones. And then somebody anonymously sent me one. And I know it wasn't Maron.
I'm gonna back you up on this and say that, yes, Mark Maron probably didn't anonymously send you a really great mic. how did this thing start? You wanted to talk about Mark. The thing with you and him, when you do those live WTF shows with him, they are, I find that the chemistry between the two of you to be maybe the funniest thing ever. When you come out just ready, because you're like loaded for bear when you come out.
Well, of course, because, you know, he now like somehow has managed to intimidate people and they come out and they feel like they need to kiss his ass. And let's be honest, Mark Maron's massive success is probably one of the most offensive things that could happen in this country. I mean, short of this whole thing with Holder and the assassination thing. After that, I would have to say it's Mark Maron's success.
to you.
No, come on. Now, be honest. Now, I know there's a whole new ethic now of, like, podcasters and, radio hosts and Twitter guys who have to be nice to each other. I know. I get that. But come on.
I hate anyone else who gets behind a mic. My gut reaction is to hate them first and feel like they're taking something from me. It's my gut reaction is like, oh, you're trying to steal my thing.
Right.
I've been doing this 13 years. Yeah, you're trying to do a podcast and take my thing. Like, that's literally what clicks. That's a millisecond inside of me the second I hear some comedian has a podcast. I hate 99% of these podcasts are pure garbage, and the people making them, 5 years ago they would have been making viral videos, and 10 years ago they probably would have been filming them falling off a ladder and sending it to America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yes.
just anything to get off television or to get to the next level. They're not doing it for the love of the thing.
Right.
It's just they see it as a ticket to the to just success.
Right. And that's exactly what I mean, that's exactly what I'm that's exactly what the game plan is here on this one in particular. It's not as common.
Oh, you're one of those people too. You're one of those people too. Oh, sorry.
But why didn't you say this to Marc Maron's face?
Uh-huh.
No.
What am I supposed to
No, anyway, I listened to when you you know, I'm not allowed to go into the garage, and you know, he won't. It's only been 2 years or whatever, 3 years.
Yeah.
He won't.
Well,
you know, he's talking about scraping the barrel. He's like looking for professional wrestlers to bring in there now, and he won't have me go in there because he's afraid to sort of deal with this. But I heard the interview when you went into the garage.
Twice. I've been there twice.
You're kidding me. You see that? And no. And you didn't express this to him at all.
I've done his show three. I think I might have done his show more than anybody in a way. I did one live show and one in-studio show. And then now I did a show with him. It's just me and him talking. We did a show called The Mark and Tom Show.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, where is it? Yeah. And it's just me and him talking to each other.
I mean, I want to hear. Well, all you're doing is repeating what I'm saying to you. I'm saying you've been in there. Why didn't you say this to Maron's face?
Say what?
You just told me about
He's one of. I think there's about five exceptions, and I think he's one of them.
No, come on, seriously.
Yes.
Oh my God. Wow.
I like him. I like Julie Klausner, and I like you.
Don't distract from the topic. Let's talk about Maron. Listen. All right, let's cut to the quick.
Oh, I am listening. Listen.
Let's cut to the quick here, okay? Let's cut to the quick here. You saw him. I know you paid attention.
Now we're going to get real.
I know. Let's get down to
it. Everything else has just been hot air.
This has all been just a prelude.
Okay.
Now
sure.
Look.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah. Look.
I know would enjoy as much as anyone when those IMers would taunt Maron on Break Room Live.
Oh no! I thought the two of you together was one of the greatest spectacles I had ever seen. And I feel like he's a guy who's doing the work to get better and to be a better person. And
I'm really disappointed in you.
You don't feel that, honestly, that he's actually working to grow as a person?
No.
You don't.
Absolutely not. No, that's a complete... Listen, I was there. I was there when he was talking to the online marketers who were suggesting that to him.
This is just...
He would sit in the office and be talking to all these guys who were talking about passive income. Passive income and search engine optimization. And
what is the moment? What is the moment where what you had became this?
Well,
like what is? Was it a series of small moments, or was there one?
It was probably the picture in the New York Times.
His picture in the New York Times.
Yeah.
So your own friend's success drove you to that. Look, I get mad at these guys. I don't even know some of these guys. I just see their name, and they got podcasts, and they got podcast networks and stuff. I don't even want that stuff, and it drives me up the wall. But this is a friend of yours. This is actually a guy who you've known for decades now.
Right. That's true. Decades. Right.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. There's a foundation for this.
You can't maybe that's...
No. Of course. Of course I'm happy. Of course I'm happy about his success. Of course I'm happy.
You're not. You're not even a little bit happy about it.
No, I am a little bit
happy. Of course I'm happy about his success. Just like barreling through it as if it's just fact. You're not even a little bit happy about it. It drives you nuts.
No. No, that's not true, actually. But it is offensive. I understand that it's offensive to America. I can still be happy about it. I mean, I find a lot of things that are offensive bring me joy.
I need to fix this now. I've proposed a Nixon-Frost kind of thing with the two of you, and the thing is, it's like two Nixons. That's the problem. That's probably going to be Nixon-Nixon. It's like you're both the dominant guy. You can't just, like, it doesn't track. If someone has to be Frost in it, neither of you are Frost.
Right. No, it doesn't have quite the same dynamic when two Nixons. It's like
falling on the floor trying to choke each other. I can't wait till you guys are doing the Sunshine Boys 30 years from now. Sam Cedar, Mark Maron. See, I'm giving you top billing. Are you happy now? I'm assuming you got some career uptick between now and 2032.
Wait, is it my career uptick or just his decline?
Your career uptick.
All right, no, I appreciate
that. You're going to end up on a sitcom.
I think that day has passed for me.
I think that when you want it least is when it's going to come.
Well, no, I mean, I wanted at least, I guess that's probably true. I mean, back when it did come, I did want at least.
Do you miss that side of it? Do you miss that fight?
Do I miss
it? I never saw the comedy side of things, like just being in the trenches on that stuff.
More sort of like creating fiction, but you know, the comedy side of it, the straight comedy side of it, I found sort of, I don't know, it got old too quick for me, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I like
I never saw you more gleeful than when I told you that I was trying to do a Midnight Pajama Jam DVD with John Benjamin. And I never saw you happier than when I told you that the sound didn't work on the one live show that was taped and I lost $1,200. And you're just like, now you're in it. Welcome to comedy.
It wasn't so much that wasn't so much the comedy aspect. And I certainly wasn't gleeful about it. But it was like I kept telling Benjamin, I kept saying, like, you know, dude, you got to do this and that. And that part of it was annoying, but it wasn't so much. I mean, those productions and stuff like that, were difficult, but I mean, I like sort of piecing together stuff, fictionally. I like story and there's, you know, I get to do that on a daily basis, but it's, there are times where, you know, fictional is more fun. And of course the lifestyle is more fun. I mean, I spend 5-6 hours a day, maybe 7-8 hours a day, just reading all sorts of political stories, and that begins to wear on you a little bit. But
feel like you don't know which way is up.
Yeah, I mean it's relentless, and you know we're not in the greatest shape this country right now. Yeah.
I don't know.
There you go. All right. So you got movie review.
What are you going to do, right? What are you going to do?
Well,
the country's falling to a slow decline. Everybody sees it coming. Right?
Yes.
It's like these things like this generally don't reverse themselves.
There's some truth to that. You can slow, I guess, the rate of decline is the theory.
Oh, no, of course. Look, I'm not saying you give up, but I'm saying it's almost kind of exciting to embrace the slide as it happens.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dilemma.
Personally,
isn't it?
I'm not in a good place personally when I say things like that. I'm suffering from a bout of sciatica right now.
Right.
That was inflicted by 100% career-driven stress. So,
Now, are you really that? Are you really that? I mean, your career is fantastic. You have like one of the best careers out there, I think.
Oh, then, woe is the person with a lesser career, because, look, I made a ton of money on the radio station. I don't get to keep any of that.
No, I know, but you were a big writer for Monk for years.
Yeah,
Yeah, you're directing music videos? Are you kidding?
Yeah, and I hemorrhage money on those music videos.
Yeah, I know.
It's not the 80s. It's not the 80s.
You don't get... They don't get
doing Duran Duran videos. It's like, you know, I'm shooting videos. I'm begging people to color correct these
things. All right, well, then you know what? We'll do it. After we give the movie recommendations, you and I will write a script together. I got a killer script.
Oh. Okay.
You want to do it?
What's it about? Is it about two radio partners who one murders the other?
That was I'm just working on the theme song. It's a derivation of Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son?
I'm not gonna say the idea right now. That might be
pretty good. Cedar and Son.
Cedar and Son. Yeah. It would be the son that we could do a basically just rip off Marin's TV idea, right? I mean, Ed Asner's still available, I think.
I like how you're the guy who's up on. You ever hear the thing where like Leno watches Letterman every night? Like literally, he'll be on the treadmill watching Letterman, and then meanwhile, like Letterman has seen Leno in 25 years. That's the dynamic now. You're the one doing all the work tracking everyone of Mark's.
You don't understand. Dude, you don't understand.
Mark has forgotten. He literally has forgotten you.
No, of course. No. The problem is that I get it at home quite a bit. Because every time we get any type of entertainment news or Nikki Look goes to the dentist and looks at People magazine. She comes home and it's always like, how come all your friends are so much more successful than you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, I saw this, a picture of Mark Maron in this, or I get people who email me videos of Maron or Sarah's new show or, whatever it is.
If you had a nickel for every time you said the word Maron angrily, you would not have to worry about any of these things.
No, I'm talking about Maron because you're on the show. You that's all. That's all. All right, let's get to some movie recommendations. Then we'll get together and do this script.
Sure. Okay. Well, it just felt my back clench up a little more.
Did that? Your back clenched up more when I talked about that?
Yes.
You know what you got to do, dude? Work on your core. Pilates.
My core?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. So what do you got? What do you got? What's a good movie that's going to make me...
Bridesmaids!
It's what is it? It's
gonna... Bridesmaids!
You know, you laugh, but I used to bring on, and he won't answer my IMs anymore, but my former board op at Air America was the original guy who would do this, Chris Rosen, who is a... a vertical editor now at moviephone.com. Didn't find out till like 6-7 months into it that he wasn't actually a movie reviewer. And Bridesmaids, I think, was one that he recommended.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I would recommend. What I actually just watched again is Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that. Not in years, though. Is it good?
It's great. It's really great.
Is it on Netflix?
I think so.
All right, that's good enough. I mean, Alice doesn't live here.
Scorsese.
Why so good?
Because it's kind of for somebody who gets labeled, because everybody was so shocked that he was that he would do a children's movie. Everybody's like, "What's the guy from Goodfellas is doing a children's movie?" It's like he's always been like a genre director, and for him to do something that's just a female character piece so early in his career, I think, shows the range that he's always had.
Wait, who did it? Who was the director of that movie?
Martin Scorsese.
Was it Scorsese? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There you go. I've learned something.
Ellen Burstyn, Chris Christopherson, Harvey Keitel is amazing in it.
It's also fairly pertinent since we've sort of in the past, it seems like 4 weeks, Women have been, you know, have been essentially almost thrown back to the time where they're chattel in the context of a marriage at this point.
Yes, it has actually, it tracks, definitely, considering all that stuff.
I love it. What else
it's
you
like,
got?
Like, well, but what else, the other thing I watched was, I just watched this thing, Facing Ali. It's this Muhammad Ali documentary.
Which one was it?
Bought him. It's called Facing Ali.
Huh.
It's if you're interested in these stories of boxers, it's worthwhile. But it's not. I would not say it's the world's greatest documentary.
Well,
but
I mean,
it's interesting enough.
There can only be one of those.
What's that?
There can only be one world.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
I'm not sure what it is, but all right. So we got Facing Ali and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I probably will watch the Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I don't know about the Facing Ali, but definitely Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. It's a great selection.
Yeah, well, I'm trying.
We went a long way for that, though. I don't know. I don't know what it was that I don't usually talk about Marin this much. You
but
really
it's okay.
brought it out in me.
He means something to you. That's why you're talking about him, because you care about him.
Yeah, I guess deep down, that's probably what it is.
You like the guy. He likes you.
I think it's true. I think in many respects, probably it's just you get a little bit lonely, you feel a little sad. That's what it comes down to. See what you created? See what you did?
I do. Hey, everyone, I want to apologize to everybody. If I had a time machine, I might not go back and kill Hitler. I might go back and stop myself from letting you do that show in 2003.
You know what? I might have thanked you.
Yes, exactly. You'd all of a sudden see the alternate reality where you'd be a staff writer on Bob's Burgers.
That's right.
Right?
No, I don't. I wouldn't. No, I don't think I'd be.
What can
doing
I get
that.
You? What can I get you, Mr. Bouchard? That would be what you'd be saying.
Oh, all right, folks. Tom Sharpling, if you have not listened to the best show on FMU, you're making a huge, it's a huge omission of style. That's a mistake.
It's essential listening.
It's essential listening. Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate it. Okay.
Tom Sharpling, everybody. All right, as is our tradition here on Fridays, we have a musical selection to play from Jimmy Reefer Cake, listener Jimmy Reefer Cake, and, of course, still have not filled the gap left by the sabbatical of the Screaming Majority, but Jimmy Reefer Cake writes in to Breitbart. Give the man credit where credit is due. He did support the end of marijuana prohibition, at least in word, if not action. I want to remind everybody I'm reading from Jimmy Reefer Cake. I have absolutely no information as to whether or not Breitbart engaged in the use of marijuana or prescription drugs. And I don't think anybody can know until his toxicology report comes out in about 4.5 weeks. Most of all, he fulfilled his duties on the Twitter Penis Patrol. So give him the slice of history that he deserves and thank him for the song, Twitter Your Wiener. Let us pause in fond remembrance of a goofy adversary. So this is, I guess, a Twitter Your Wiener remix. I haven't heard it. Let's hear it now.
To Breitbart, you're a 8-foot tall son of a bitch who busted a politician named Wiener for showing his wiener.
To Breitbart. Legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. I'm not in favor of that. Don't smoke, stay off of drugs, and stay in school, kids.
Twitter your wiener.
Freaks and animals!
Bill Clinton got a Hummer, and that was okay.
Freaks.
From a big-tittied woman at his desk, for God's sake.
Freaks.
Spitzer got himself a high-class hoe.
Freaks.
And they say JFK had Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
Maybe Wiener will win the next election. He's Twittered out himself a nice big erection. He can Twitter his Wiener. Twitter his Wiener. He can Twitter his Wiener. Why don't you Twitter your Wiener? Larry Craig tapped a toe cause he used a wide stance. Chrisley likes a lady with a penis in her pants. David Vitter wore diapers with his prostitute. And he still got reelected. Isn't that cute? He doesn't have the balls to legalize weed. He can Twitter his Wiener. He can plant his seed. He can Twitter his Wiener. Twitter his Wiener. He can Twitter his Twitter his Twitter his Twitter his Twitter.
All right, well, Jimmy Reefercake going back into the studio and doing a remix. I don't know if that's quite as danceable as one might look towards for a remix, but
he didn't say it was a dance remix.
Oh, I didn't realize it. Do people make other remixes for non-dancing?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is our program for today. We've gone very late on the Freebie podcast. On Monday, I will be reading off some of those emails as to why people have not become members.
And keep sending them in, too.
Keep sending them in. If it's a money issue, of course, we don't need to do that. You don't need to tell us.
Yeah,
and if it is a money issue, tell us and we will work out a deal and you can get the
specifically the for people who are not members and it's not due to financial reasons.
There you go. I will take your phone calls in the better half of the program at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the phone number to become a part of this program. You can also IM me at Majority FM. It's Casual Friday, folks. Don't forget, you can support this program by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link. Go to majority.fm, click support the show. Bookmark this link, buy all your Amazon crap from it. We get a kickback. Also, justcoffee.coop, coupon code majority, get a 10% discount, fair trade, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Give us a good review on iTunes, folks, won't you please? What else? Oh, we got merch, if you're interested in merch.
Did you say donate your account?
Oh, and donateyouraccount.com.
We are so close to 1,000 social media account donations. We're at like 955. Come on, get us to 1,000 at least.
Head over there. You can allow us to retweet once a day, once a week, once a month on your Twitter account, or to post things to your wall, I guess, or whatever it is on Facebook. We never get complaints about it. We are very judicious. Help spread the word of both the program and what we talk about. All right, folks, see you in the better half. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the phones at 646-257-3920. Sydney calling from California. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sam.
Is this Sydney Moon?
This is Sydney Moon.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, yes. What a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, Sydney Moon from SydneyMoon.com calling into the program. How are you?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous because, you know, I think you're really cute, and
well, now
I wasn't
I'm a little
sure if
nervous
you thought I was a real
wife
person.
Is listening to the program, Sydney Moon, ladies and gentlemen. And now what magazine did you pose in? Was it you were a was it Playboy?
I've done Playboy. I'm actually a centerfold. Always the bridesmaid and never the bride.
Well, that was a huge mistake from as far as I can tell.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
And, so you have no reason to be nervous here. You're all the way in California.
Well, I just wanted to say that I love the show, and in honor of Name Drop Friday, I wanted to call in and, you know, just let you know I was a real person out here and listen every day.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Sydney's been a fan. I mean, on Twitter, and I've actually seen you were interviewed on the Young Turks a year or two ago, right? Or more.
Yes, I love the Young Turks too. So you guys are pretty much my top two podcasts. I listen to every day.
Oh, I wonder if Mark Maron heard that.
Actually, you know, as you were interviewing, was it John before?
Tom Sharpley.
I was thinking I don't actually subscribe to WTF. So maybe I should start.
Oh,
but I'm really into the
that, that had the complete opposite effect of what I was trying to go for there.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you are married, so, you know.
Yes, yes.
You're off the market anyway. So.
I am off the market. But now that we have you on the phone, let's ask a couple of questions here. Now, because you have a lot of correspondence. You have your own member site. People can you have videos up there and photos, and it's like soft core. Would you describe it as soft core?
Yeah. I mean, I've posed with girls pretty explicitly, but I've never done boy girl stuff or like porn movies, per se. I mean, I've done some clips that have been on my website, but not actual DVDs or whatever. Whatever the kids are watching these days.
Right.
Pay-per-view, I don't know.
And so basically we have similar business models, essentially. Members, right, on your site. And
yeah.
Now, do you get – I've seen like I know that you sometimes get into political conversations with some of your members, right? I mean, via obviously email and Twitter. What
– Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. I'm curious as to does your audience tend to be more liberal, more conservative, or is it sort of split down the middle? Do you get? I know you've gotten into arguments with some of your fans before.
Yeah, I mean, it really varies. It's all over the map, but I do think that, you know, I've angered people at times, and people don't necessarily want to hear my point of view. You know, they just kind of want to see the pictures and the videos. And but I think, you know, when you have a forum, when you can speak your mind and tweet whatever's going on with you, I'm just kind of a normal person. I don't like to fake this whole thing, which probably would be better for me business-wise.
Right.
But, I like to raise people's awareness if I can. But a lot of people, you know, right-wingers, they don't really listen to reason. So... kind of given up with certain people.
I gotta say, I really do. I really do admire you for doing that. I mean, because obviously, look, I'm here, and my job is to espouse political opinions and analysis and commentary, and that's what people expect. And I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for people who use their celebrity or whatever their platforms in some way to, you know, to be in some way socially responsible and involved. And I have a tremendous admiration for you for that, because I do think it probably doesn't help your business to do that.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. I mean, some people agree with me and they think it's great, you know, but I do think it's important. I mean, I care about these causes. I care about these issues. And I want people to know about things if they don't happen to get exposed to political stuff, regularly. And the other thing is, you know, I do also, it is kind of important to me. And I'm in a business that objectifies women. I mean, period, full stop. But at the same time, if I'm going to do that, I at least want to model that I am a four-dimensional human being, you know, with points of view. And, you know, people should see that, you know.
What do you think about that? I mean, in terms of your industry being one about objectifying women? Because, I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, there's a certain amount of that, I think, that exists in any type of entertainment business, if not a lot of that exists in that. Give me your perspective on that. I mean, how do you reconcile that, or do you, or what?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'll say is I like to watch porn. You know, I consume porn as well. And I think to want to do that is really natural and human. You know, not all women do, you know, for various reasons. But a lot of them could or might, given a particular, you know, whatever they're into, you know, whatever that little niche is that would do it for them. But I think that, you know, the biggest problem is that the stigma is just so huge still. And, you know, I consider myself sort of a sex positive feminist. And, you know, in that vein, I think, you know, it's important for us to not have shame about our bodies and for us to be out there. And it just happens because we live in a sexist society that, you know, women sort of bear the brunt of the judgment about it. Even from people from the left. I mean, when the Young Turks interviewed me, you know, I was so happy to talk to them. But the thing that I didn't like was there was so much focus on, you know, what do my parents think about what I do? And, you know, I didn't like that because I thought that it's a legitimate question. But sort of there's this implication there, I believe, that, you know, it's something to be ashamed of. Right. It's not something to be accepted. And, you know, they know that I have higher education. And so there was sort of this sense of if you're educated, if you can do other things, you know, why would you or do that? And so, you know, I would really challenge that rather than it being like an either or proposition, you know, that they're not mutually exclusive, that somebody can be intelligent and can, you know, succeed in life in other areas and have been in the adult industry. It's possible.
Right. I mean, I think that question is actually more apt for like someone like Chris Rosen, who comes on, he's a vertical editor of Movie Line. I'd like to know what his parents think about that, quite frankly. No, but I got to tell you, as a father of a young daughter, I really think that, frankly, there is so much more—not even much more, because I don't see what you do as problematic in this regard. For my daughter, what I see as problematic for my daughter in terms of things that I should be shielding her from is mostly like things like you know, animated versions of Cinderella. Or of Barbie dolls, you know, like things that sort of project onto her some standard that she needs to live into, or some notion of, you know, if you're a princess, you got to wait for the prince to come along and save you. These are the things that I think are far more that upset me in the context of society. That there are makers of certain entertainment vehicles whose parents should be far more concerned about what those makers of those entertainment vehicles are doing, frankly, than I think your parents should be of your version of the entertainment. Appreciate your disposition about it. I mean, you're the only, I think, the only person who's involved in the porn industry to the extent that I follow on Twitter, that I have any interest in following their career.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I do think that there's an argument that, you know, Cinderella images are just on the spectrum, you know, that porn is also on. And so, you know, some people would say that it is similar. I mean, with the women are larger than life and their breasts are larger than life, you know, and porn, but,
Cinderella's for kids. Cinderella's for kids, you know, at the time where they're sort of forming their notion of their worldview. I mean, I don't recommend that. I don't think the kids should be exposed to porn. But you know, we give a 4-year-old Cinderella.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah. I mean,
I wasn't more that I wasn't so conscious of it until, you know, I'm starting to read these stories to my daughter, and I'm like, you know, feeling obligated, going, well, you know, this whole thing where you meet the prince and then happily ever after. Let's just say they went out on a couple of dates and they hung out and they were friends for a long time. And, I'm having to qualify these stories that have been out there for so long, as I'm just sort of suggesting to my daughter that, you know, well, the real lesson here is that you really just got to wait around till you meet the right guy. That I find problematic.
Right. Well, there's a lot out there. So as a parent, I mean, there's so much, supervision and sort of filtering that needs to go on. So I don't envy you that job.
Yes. Well, what are you going to do? But folks, Sydney, thank you so much for calling in. SydneyMoon.com.
Thanks.
Is that it?
That's right. Join the party.
There you go. All right. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
All right. Let's go to the IM. That was nice. A Square. Sam, your riff on the made-up controversy around Derek Bell was great, and since it's Name Drop Friday, I briefly chatted with Professor Bell in 2009. But after your riff about worms and parasites, I see Breitbart zombies everywhere. By the way, John Stewart used your same frame juxtaposing the Bell non-issue against Obama's civil liberties issues, but he used Gitmo instead of Holder speech. So to the Daily Show producer watching or listening, let me say you're welcome. Indeed.
It's not the first time.
Yeah. What are you going to do? I don't think, these ideas are floating around out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should. Neferkitty, happy casual Friday. Sammy, happy casual Friday to you. Bush and Chains. Let's go. Good news, Keynesians. Disaster narrowly averted in Greece. You know, the jobs numbers are doing pretty good in this country right now. Not doing great. Not sufficient. Not necessarily guaranteed to continue, but good jobs report, incidentally. Bush and Chains, your TBTF, corporatist government welfare banks like J.P. Morgan are intact to commit grand larceny another day. Are intact. I see. That's one word. Looks like Bernanke's printing presses are helping some people. U.S. trade balance worst in 39 months with largest 3-month drop in 20 years. Part-time workers celebrate the recovery with soaring gun purchases. The head pedophile condemns same-sex marriage in speech to U.S. bishops. MF Global still set to pay bonuses. This is an unbelievable story. They walked away with what? Was it like over a billion? Like just billions. Was it billions or a billion? Of dollars. They basically just bet with their clients' money illegally, unless you define it as not being illegal. And the executives helping the trustee in the wake of the firm's collapse could get hundreds of thousands of dollars in bonuses. Bolton and you bash Obama for executive power grabs. I know this is, it's so twisted. I don't even know how to express it. Good news, Coke, Pepsi, lowering the carcinogen levels in their products. Wow. Anonymous hackers leak Norton antivirus source code. Glad we don't have any PCs around here. Not only did Obama's TBTF corporatist bank quietly euthanize Greece today, they averted bankruptcy themselves and convinced their Greek collusionists to add more debt to their enslaved populace. Thank God the ECB can now release $3 trillion in their ill-gotten Fed gains and now let gold go through to the next level. Israeli airstrike on Gaza kills 2 people. Harold, those darn irrational theocrats keep trying to get a hold of the nuclear arsenal. A cartoon at markfiori.com. I like single panel cartoons. Oh, it's a animated. Cool J146. Any thoughts on the Kony 2012 video? Haven't seen it, but it's blowing up on social media. Seems like propaganda. I don't quite get it. I keep asking Matt every day of the past couple of days, like, what is this Coney thing? Some people think it's pretty dubious that put out by evangelicals. Coney's not even in the country apparently anymore.
Yeah, Coney's not in Uganda anymore. They want to fund the Ugandan army to go after him. The Ugandan army is not much, like, they're not like a great organization themselves.
Right.
And I mean, the whole video is talking about how this guy, Joseph Kony, has this army of children, and he uses this army of children as his army.
I feel like we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah, he's been around for years, but Invisible Children put this video out, really like making it the whole situation sound very simple, like it was bad guy versus good guy, and the guy in the video is one of the guys running Invisible Children. He says to like his 5-year-old son, like daddy's not gonna stop till we get the bad guy or something like that. Just making it so incredibly like simple sounding, such a complex situation. And I mean, they want to fund an army to go find this guy. But I mean,
aren't they pushing for U.S. intervention as well?
Yes, they wanted the U.S. to help arm and train the Ugandan army for this purpose, but. The whole point is to save these kids who are being forced to join his army, the LRA, Lord's,
right,
whatever it was called, which Rush Limbaugh, funny enough, defended them because they were Christians.
Yes, I think we actually covered that back in the day.
Yeah, but they want to fund the Ugandan army to go in and stop this guy, to save the kids who are in his army, but ostensibly, they're going to be killing this guy's army, which are the kids they want to save. Like, there's no way around that.
Right. Right. I don't know. I haven't watched the video. To be honest with you, I've been completely out of it.
And on top of that, something like only 34% of the funding they raised goes to actual the purpose of their help, and everything else goes to like putting together the videos and salary.
A lot of administrative costs. Attention only seems to be paid to humanitarian situations that countries we want to intervene in. Not our allies or countries we are intervening in. Case in point, Afghanistan is ranked the worst country to be a child, yet no viral social media video highlighting this because it would reflect poorly on the U.S. Yet conveniently, we want to intervene in an area of Africa, and lo and behold, we conveniently have a viral video about the humanitarian situation there. By that area of Africa, I mean Uganda, where the Coney video takes place. I mean, I don't know about that aspect of it, but... and I don't necessarily think that because something's evangelical, it is necessarily wrong, but, I don't know. I'm just not sure I want to spend too much time digging into this.
Yeah, there was a picture circulating of the three founders of the company who are like these young looking like white frat guys kind of look.
Well,
like.
they're
hanging out with the Ugandan army holding bazookas and guns.
That part seems a little ridiculous.
Yes.
Is there a way to buy a year membership one at a time, or is it monthly? Email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will figure something out. Majorityreporters@gmail.com. Left Coast Marcus, the multiple party system is not all it's cracked up to be. You don't have to be majority government. It's a good thing because you have multiple points of view to influence legislation. Right now in Canada, we have a Tea Party-like radical wing government with a majority elected 36% of the popular vote. They can pass any legislation they like and debt limit as they like. We effectively have a dictatorship with 6 out of 10 Canadians against their mandate. You know, there is something to be said from that. I mean, you look at the parliamentary process in Israel. That's always one or two extremely fundamentalist religious or right-wing groups that hold the sway to a unity, not a unity government, but to a coalition majority. And so they end up getting a lot of stuff that distorts the politics of the country. You know, it may just be there's no perfect way of doing this. And... the most effective thing I've seen, at least in implicating some policy or heading that direction, was Occupy. And I'm not saying the movement has to be Occupy or whatnot, but I just think that there is a lot of value to people projecting that they're extremely agitated in an extended period of time and in an extended and committed way. Trump's writing in someone's name who's never going to win the presidency. Sammy, I don't know who that nutcase is talking to you, but he sounds drunk. I don't like Mark with you as much. He was good in the morning with Mark, but on your own, you're still 20 times better. Thank you, Day Day Fru. This guy has also no clue who you are. You rock as long as I've been, as I've been saying since 2004, 2005. There is no such thing as too much Sam Cedar. Thank you, Day Day Fru. We became a plutocracy, says Evening Star, when people knowingly voted against their interests in 1980. It would be smarter to, or at least consider, voting for Jill Stein, who will not take away your constitutional rights. Obama will win anyway, but a sizable vote for her will warn the plutocrats that their power is not limitless. How? How? I don't believe that. I mean, I fundamentally don't even believe that. Do you think? Well, first of all, tell me what the percentage it is that Jill Stein has to get before the plutocrats are scared. Seriously. I mean, if Jill Stein takes 15% of the vote and it comes from Obama and Mitt Romney's in there, have you scared the plutocrats? If she takes 1% of the vote, have you scared the plutocrats? Do you know how easy it is to go in and vote for somebody who's not going to win an election? What about that action scares the plutocrats? Seriously, I mean, the notion is fantastical. I think Occupy scared the plutocrats. But I don't think writing in Jill Stein's name is going to, I don't know who Jill Stein is. I think there's value in a person's ideas, but I think the focus on trying to turn a losing hand into something better bespeaks of too much emphasis being put on the presidency. You know, it's like you're at a poker table chasing a straight flush. And in the meantime, you're doing so. You're not working your job as the valet or whatever it is. And it's like, I don't need to actually go to my job, because I could get this straight flush. No, it's just we just don't have a winning hand right now. And shooting yourself in the foot as a protest against that does not in any way help your hand. I'm mixing a lot of metaphors. Pine Top, Sam, I donated a trivial dollar amount to the show today. Any chance for a shofar blast out? Pine Top, there is no such thing as a donation of a trivial amount. There's only a donation. And so for you, sir, or lady. Kyle, Mark Maron just tweeted, "Hey, Sharpling, you don't have to do Sam Cedar's show. Don't get sucked in," and he made his own mess. Also, Sydney Moon calling in on my phone system is the new best reason for having developed the phone system. Granola crunching lib, for a scriptwriter who wants to build up his core, Pilates, not Pilates. There you go. No, you haven't seen pilot season? It's Pilates in the pilot season. That JR song, says Long Doggy, would have been much better if you used the verb tweet. Tweet your wiener sounds better than Twitter your wiener, in my humble opinion, grammar aside. That's a good point. Crystal Count, Sydney Hart Sam. Wow, if you find one of those spouse tracking apps on your phone, next trip to California, Sam, Well, but in your defense, if Nikki really wants you to be more like a bigwig Hollywood friends, a business visit with Nikki would only make sense. Maybe a members-only Cedar Moon video section cross-branded on both sites. If you promise Nikki not to enjoy the work in any way, win-win. You and Sharpling talking, you and Marin, was awesome. I think his Frost-Nixon-Nixon idea equals a must-do. Okajik, Sam, two Dems, Senator Mark Udall and Representative Adam Smith, have introduced legislation to repeal NDAA indefinite detention law. Hope this takes off. Thank you, Okajik. Sounds, I just did a Google image search of Sydney Moon. I'm happy to see that she has a concern for an interest in liberal politics. Sexy and substantive. Any Mila stories? They always make me laugh. Tor, but didn't you encourage voting for Nader in 2000? I won't be voting for Obama because I live in California, so I can get away with doing a protest vote for Rocky Anderson if he gets on the ballot. Well, I wasn't really in a position to encourage people to vote for Nader in 2000, but I did vote for Nader in 2000, indeed. And I did one of those vote swaps with people in Florida. And I think to a certain extent, it was my experience with Nader that has made me so adamant about this. Now, I did do a vote swap. I was voting in New York, and I'm not convinced that if in New York, with our electoral system as it was, I mean, if it was national, you know, if we just did a national vote, it might be different. And if you're in a state that is, you know, like California, as you say, or New York, and you cast your protest vote, I don't know how much of a difference it would make. But, you know, if you perceive the voting exercise as being exclusively protest because of the nature of where you're voting, then, you know, go for it. I mean, I vote on the Working Family Party's ticket in this state because we have fusion voting, and I don't, you know, my hope is that in the long run, it strengthens the Working Families Party. Had Nader begun to do what he sort of explicitly, if not implicitly, promised, which was to build a third party, but he didn't do that. He completely abandoned it, and he left the Green Party in worse shape than it was before. And I think, you know, the way to building a party, I think, is, you know, sort of more like the Working Families Party is doing in New York and in Connecticut. And they've had their problems, too, though. It's very difficult. I just don't think that. I just think it's it is nonsensical to vote in the same way that you protest. I just don't believe in a protest vote. There's no such thing. There's just no such thing. Or to the extent that one can make a protest vote, it you better be sure, if it has any practical implications, that vote, which maybe you could argue in a state like New York it doesn't, and I think that's a good argument. But if it has any practical implications, know that your protest vote is actually more than useless. That's just the reality, folks. I don't know what else to tell you. That's just the reality. PF 1800, the Kony 2012 video has been criticized by very thoughtful people who are familiar with Uganda. Doing some Googling will turn those critiques up. I would urge your listeners to do a little research on their own. It's a nuanced issue that doesn't lend itself to brief summarization. Lavish praise for invisible children is unwarranted, but so is an unadulterated negativity. Fair enough. I don't think we did anywhere. Bush and Chains will get the final I am of the day again. This is 2 days in a row for Bush and Chains. U.S. counter sues Warren Buffett's net jets over unpaid tax liability. One wonders if net jets pay less tax than Buffett's secretary. FBI Director Robert Mueller on Wednesday said he would have to go back and check with the Department of Justice whether Attorney General's Eric Holder's criteria for the targeted killing of Americans also applied to Americans inside the U.S. And isn't that a wonderful way?
At least he's going to ask!
Now it was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodaloo.
Oh, oh, lady of the leap, oh, 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 lady of the leap.
All right, folks. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Don't get paid for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.